The Shroud. Supposedly, the burial cloth used by Joseph of Arimathea to wrap the body of Christ after the crucifixion. Capital C's. The cloth supposedly wrapped around Christ when he was resurrected, with his image, his blood, imprinted upon it. Wow, I said. What do you know about the shroud, Mr. Dresden?
Not much. Christ's burial cloth. They did a bunch of tests in the 70s, and no one was able to conclusively disprove it. It almost got burned a few years back when the cathedral caught fire. There are stories that it has healing powers, or that a couple of angels still attend it. A bunch of others I can't remember right now.
Father Vincent rested his hands on the table and leaned toward me.
Mr. Dresden, the shroud is perhaps the single most vital artifact of the Church. It is a powerful symbol of the faith, and one in which many people believe. It is also politically significant. It is absolutely vital to Rome that it be restored to the Church's custody as expediently as possible.
I stared at him for a second and tried to pick out my words carefully. Are you going to be insulted if I suggest that it's very possible that the shroud is, significant, magically speaking? Vincent pressed his lips together.
I have no illusions about it, Mr. Dresden. It is a piece of cloth, not a magic carpet. Its value derives solely from its historical and symbolic significance.
Uh-huh, I said.
Hell's bells, that's where plenty of magical power came from. A shroud was old and regarded as special, and people believed in it. That could be enough to give it a kind of power all by itself.
Some people might believe otherwise, I said.
Of course, he agreed. That is why your knowledge of the local occult may prove invaluable.
I nodded, thinking. This could be something completely mundane. Someone could have stolen a moldy old piece of cloth to sell it to a crackpot who believed it was a magic bedsheet. It could be that the shroud was nothing more than a symbol, an antique, a historical Pop-Tart. Nifty, but ultimately not very significant. Of course, there was also the possibility that the shroud was genuine, that it actually had been in contact with the Son of God when he had been brought back from the dead. I pushed that thought aside. Regardless of why or how, if the shroud was something special, magically speaking, then it could mean a whole new and nastier ball game. Of all the various weird, dark, or wicked powers who might abscond with a shroud, I couldn't think of any who would do anything cheerful with it. All sorts of supernatural interests might be at play. Even discounting that possibility, mortal pursuit of the shroud seemed to be deadly enough. John Marcone might already be involved, as well as the Chicago police, probably Interpol and the FBI too. Even sans supernatural powers, when it came to finding people, the cops were damned good at what they did. Odds were good that they'd locate the thieves and haul in the shroud within a few days. I looked from the photos to the cash and thought about how many of my bills I could pay off with a nice fat fee, courtesy of Father Vincent. If I got lucky, maybe I wouldn't have to put myself in harm's way to do it. Sure, I believe that. I put the money in my pocket, then I picked up the photos too. How can I get in touch with you?
Father Vincent wrote a phone number on the motel's stationery and passed it to me.
Here, it's my answering service while I'm in town.
All right, I can't promise you anything concrete, but I'll see what I can do.
Father Vincent stood up and said,
Thank you, Mr. Dresden. Father Forthill spoke most highly of you, you know.
He's a sport, I agreed, rising.
If you will excuse me, I have appointments to keep.
I'll bet. Here's my card if you need to get in touch.
I gave him a business card, shook hands, and left. At the Beetle, I stopped to open the trunk and put the shotgun back in it after taking the shell from the chamber and making sure the safety was on. Then I pulled out a length of wood a little longer than my forearm, carved over with runes and sigils that helped me focus my magic a lot more precisely. I tossed my suit jacket in over the gun
and dug out a silver bracelet, dangling a dozen tiny medieval-style shields from my pocket. I fastened that to my left arm, slipped a silver ring onto my right hand, then took my blasting rod and set it beside me on the car seat as I got in. Between the new case, the outfit hitter, and Duke Ortega's challenge, I wanted to make damn sure that I wasn't going to get caught with my eldritch britches down again. I took the Beetle home to my apartment. I rent the basement apartment of a huge, creaking old boarding house. By the time I got back, it was after midnight, and the late February air was speckled with occasional flakes of wet snow that wouldn't last once they hit the ground. The adrenaline rush of the Larry Fowler show and then the hired goon attack had faded and left me aching, tired, and worried. I got out of the car, determined to head for bed, then get up early and start to work on Vincent's case. A sudden sensation of cold, rippling energy and a pair of muffled thumps from the stairs leading down to my apartment changed my mind. I drew out my blasting rod and readied the shield bracelet on my left wrist. But before I could step over to the stairs, a pair of figures flew up them and landed heavily on the half-frozen ground beside the gravel parking lot. They struggled, rolling, until one of the shadowy figures got a leg underneath the form on top of it and pushed. The second figure flew 20 feet through the air, landed on the gravel with a thump and a cough of expelled air, then got up and sprinted away. Shield readied, I stepped forward before the remaining intruder could rise. I forced an effort of will through the blasting rod, setting the runes along its length alight with scarlet. Fire coalesced at the tip of the rod, bright as a road flare. But I held the strike as I stepped forward, shoving the tip of the blasting rod down at the intruder. "Make a move, and I'll fry you." Red light fell over a woman. She was dressed in jeans, a black leather jacket, a white t-shirt, and gloves. She had her long midnight hair tied back in a tail. Dark, oblique eyes smoldered up at me from beneath long lashes. Her beautiful face held an expression of wary amusement. My heart thudded in sudden pain and excitement. "Well," Susan said, looking from the sizzling blasting rod up to my face, "I've heard of running into an old flame, but this is ridiculous."